Division Manager for Program Evaluation and Research in the Department of Finance and Procurement here at Loudoun County. And with me, we do have our team who we can introduce along the way. We have Barb Lawrence, who is our coordinator, our grants coordinator. We have Daryl Simpson, who's our grants analyst. And we have Tracy Alperstein, who's our nonprofit support specialist for our ARPA programs. And as we move forward and get started, again, please, we want to make this as conversational as possible. So we'll go ahead and get started. We also are recording this. This will be placed on Loudoun County's website for future viewing. So please be sure to check back. We have several resources that we post on a regular basis. So Tracy, go ahead. Next slide, please. So that we have two objectives for the presentation today, and we want to make sure that we are meeting your needs as well. So if you do have specific questions or specific areas of interest that you want to see, in addition to these objectives, please put them in the chat. But essentially what we are doing today is increasing your awareness and understanding of federal grant prospecting. So this is really searching for those federal and state grants, understanding where to find opportunities, but then also how to tailor those opportunity proposals to fit your needs and also the needs of the funder. We also want to increase your understanding of standard government grant proposal components. So we are going to be showing you a little bit about the grant narrative process, needs statements, logic models, and how to build out your activities and align them with your goals and objectives for your programs. So a lot of information to cover today, and we want to make sure that we get to as much of it as possible. Next slide, Tracy. Thank you. And so with that, I'm going to turn this over to Daryl, and he's going to be showing you some prospecting tools as well as demonstrating some of the prospecting activities. And again, if you do have questions, please place them in the chat or raise your hand as we move forward. Daryl?
Thanks, Megan. Again, my name is Daryl Simpson. I'm the grants analyst for this team, the program evaluation and research team within the Department of Finance and Procurement. As grants analyst, my priorities lie largely pre-submission of grant applications. What that means is I do a lot of the prospecting and researching for the 37 county departments that Loudoun has. I refer appropriate grant opportunities to those departments and follow up with them with whatever services they require. that could be as in-depth as helping with the writing and submission of the grant proposal itself, just monitoring, editing, copy editing, making sure that all the T's are crossed and the I's are dotted. Whatever's needed to get that grant in for submission. So we're going to take a little while today to talk about my workflow and the typical workflow that you as a nonprofit organization might experience when you're seeking federal and state grants. My spiel as a grant prospector and part-time grant writer is that there's a delicate balance in grant writing between being a science and an art. So hopefully you'll be able to see some of that as we go through the slides today and see where pieces are data-driven and evidence-based and where pieces are open to interpretation and flair and customization based on your organization's needs. So within our workflow, we're going to talk a little bit about identifying priorities, assessing your organizational capacity, targeting your research to narrow down on what grant prospects you want to apply for, narrowing that focus based on your organization's capacity and the programmatic needs, And then we're going to look a little bit at methods, which in this case refers a lot to grant tracking and database keeping to keep up with what you've prospected and applied for, and hopefully at the end of the day, been awarded. Next slide, please. So again, the first thing we're going to look at is identifying priorities. So when you're identifying your priorities, this is where you clearly want to identify and define your organization's objectives and try to be as specific as possible about the project or program that you are seeking funding for. A lot of this will rely on having a well-defined mission for your organization that will drive a lot of what your priorities will be. Another thing that would be important is your strategic plan. You know, a strategic plan will begin with an assessment, and that assessment will be both external to your organization and within. A strategic plan is typically made up of a few different components, the vision and the mission of your organization. The difference between those two being the vision is what you hope to achieve in the future for your organization. The mission is what you're doing right now. The next part of a strategic plan would be the goals and objectives. When we speak about goals and objectives, we are looking at specific and measurable. There's an acronym called SMART when it comes to goals. So when you hear me refer to specific and measurable, that's the S and the M of that SMART acronym. You'll also look at your tasks. The tasks are what you do in order to achieve those goals and objectives. You'll also have action steps within your strategic plan. These include timelines, determining roles and responsibilities, who's responsible for which part, and generally involves a sequential chain of events. And then the last part of a typical strategic plan is results measurement. So you want to be able to develop a way to determine outcomes and performance based on the goals and objectives you set at the beginning. Next slide, Tracy. And again, we're just talking about the funding priorities reflecting the organization's goals. Before you start the prospecting procedure, it's imperative that you have a clear understanding of what your organization's mission and your goals are. And these should reflect back on the mission and values that the organization has set. And everything should be driven by data, should be evidence-based. We're going to take a look at data and on the surface level anyway, and talk about some of the importance of how that is. Next slide. So we're going to share a link in the chat to Loudon's data toolkit. This has some of the information I was referring to as far as how to gather the important data that you might need to create or develop your priorities. So identifying these priorities requires you to identify a community need. That's the first step, is what kind of need exists in our community that would drive the need for programmatic support through supplemental funding and grants. You want to be able to identify the programs and services that align with your mission and your goals that are evidence-based and evidence-informed, meaning it can be backed up by studies, by reports from other jurisdiction or surveys that you've conducted yourself. What you really want to avoid here is assumptions. Based on what you think might be happening or anecdotal evidence, you really want to have that raw statistical data to back you up here. Some of the things that we typically use for data in a general sense are, you know, census reports. There's a lot you can drill down into from census reports into specific demographics or certain areas. There's access in Loudoun to our census tracts, which show vulnerable populations or underserved areas, things that might be required to create a needs assessment. So our needs assessment is the foundation of grant seeking and our proposals. And a needs assessment can't... A needs assessment can be done before, but if performed correctly and identifying the proper program, you can include large parts of that need assessment when you actually create your proposal as well. As Barb will speak on later, a needs assessment is a general part of an overall grants proposal. This needs assessment will successfully compile, analyze, and present the data to show the necessity for that grant proposal. The next thing we look at is a SWOT analysis. SWOT stands for strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. This is an internal assessment that you can do that will help identify challenges or identify and challenge assumptions about your organization that may create risk. It may also help you reveal blind spots that you might have that you may not have otherwise realized. So a SWOT analysis is typically made up of a quick table with 2x2 where you outline each of those categories, strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. And just look at threats. When you see threats, just think risk. And then we're looking at how to measure demand. Is there an increase in need? What shows need for your services? Have there been increases in signups for programs that you're running? Is there a long wait list? What sort of measurable things are occurring that would drive need for a particular grant program? I'll stop here, and if anyone has any questions before we move on. Excellent. Tracy, we can go to our keywords. So you guys were all asked to identify some search words that you have used or would use when seeking seeking out grant opportunities. So we took some of these words, well, we took all of these words and put them into a little word cloud to show some of the similarities that we have across organizations here. The words that show up in larger print are words that were presented by multiple organizations. So things like healthcare, education, community, things like that were identified as priorities for a lot of different organizations. But as you can see by the general number of words here, there's a lot of distinction. There's a lot of different priorities and diversity here in the county amongst our nonprofit population, which is really good to see and really reflective of a vibrant nonprofit community. So, Tracy, I think we have a little poll that we can activate now, and then we'll talk about it. So you'll see this poll. Just quickly respond, you know, what keywords do you use in your grant seeking? This is just kind of reflecting what we got in the pre session questionnaire. So if you want to pick as many of those, or actually the top three most used, and press submit, we should be able to see some live results. All right, starting to see some responses come in. Excellent.
I don't see a poll. I just see it says keywords poll, but I don't see anything to pick words.
If you go onto your top toolbar, there should be a prompt there for polls. And see if it comes up there. Is everybody seeing that now?
This is Doug with Loudon Club 12. Nothing.
This is Amber. I see it in the chat, and I'm able to select. But once you hit submit, it says something went wrong. So it's in the chat.
I have the same problem. But if I clicked it twice,
That's interesting. Okay.
If you click it twice, it'll send for some reason.
So we can double click.
Okay, thanks.
We'll take just another minute to see what other responses we get.
And Daryl, we do have a hand that's raised.
I see. Looks like Becky. Becky, did you have a question?
I think Becky just put her response use services into the chat.
Got it.
Does everyone see the raised hand function at the top of their toolbar? Maybe what we can do is go down the list and see how many hands are raised as well, since folks aren't able to see the poll or able to submit. So if you have a hand raised, education, raise your hand if you use that as a keyword.
There they come.
All right. About four. What about health? Okay. We're seeing about eight. Economic development? A few. Yeah, a few. All right. Youth services? Okay, we're looking at 9, 10, 11, 12. All right, youth services is a big one. Housing. Okay, we've got 4, 5, 6. Arts. A few, 3. All right, disabilities. And so this could be adults with disabilities or children with disabilities. Okay, 6. Hunger, 4, 5, 7, all right. Addiction and recovery services. Just a couple, all righty. Mental health supports. Okay, I figured that'd be a big one, 9, 10, okay. Low-income or impoverished populations. That's a big one. About 13, 14. Jobs. All right, 5, 6. And elderly care. 5, 6. And then I assume many of you who are raising your hands and those in the audience also use multiple of these all the time, right? I mean, it's going to be the combination and the alignment to the mission that really makes it important for multiple keywords. Okay, excellent. Thank you. All right, Daryl, sorry about that. I'll turn it back over to you.
No, I think this was a good exercise. I think it actually reflected the word cloud that we had generated pretty closely, which is it's just a general snapshot of what the priorities are amongst our audience today. And it's a decent sample size given the number of folks that showed up. So, so I'm going to share my screen now. and take over the PowerPoint as we go through the next few sections, which will be sort of interactive. So this is my screen. Hopefully everybody can see that. And we're looking at the next session, section of our workflow, which is assessing capacity. And this is where we'll also put the link into the chat for our capacity checklist. This is another tool that our nonprofit partners can use to help determine if your organization has the capacity or what level of capacity there might be for seeking and executing grants. It's probably a good part to point out that as important as it is to research and apply for appropriate grant opportunities to support your programs, it's just as important to be able to properly execute those, because once you receive the funds, you will have reporting requirements based on the funder. And if we're looking at federal funders, they will have very specific requirements for you to complete to justify use of their grant funds. So assessing capacity is also the process of evaluating your organization's resources and capabilities before starting the grant seeking process. This helps to ensure that your organization has the funds, the staff, the skill level, the facilities and other resources you would need to implement the programs with the quality needed to achieve those desired outcomes. So the next thing we look at is targeting our research. So if we're organization A, Daryl's nonprofit organization, we've identified what our priorities are based on what my mission and values statement are, based on community need, based on the capacity that we have. Now we can start to narrow down our potential targets. And this is where the fun part comes in, where you actually get to look up grants to carry out. So for federal grants, these are some of the general websites that I go to. We'll take a little bit deeper dive into grants.gov here shortly, because that is the main repository for finding federal grant opportunities. We also want to mention the Federal Register. I'll speak about that a little bit as well. GrantWatch and GrantStation are other tools we can use to sort out grants. And then Virginia State Grants, the governor's office has a very good webpage that will show you what opportunities exist on the state level through the Commonwealth. So at this point, I want to give a shout out to the Community Foundation here in Loudoun, who has been a go-to for philanthropic initiatives in Loudoun for quite a while. And it goes along with other community foundations across the state and even across the country. So we have a very viable and vibrant resource here in Loudoun with the Community Foundation to help you seek your funding and help guide that search as well. I'll also take this time to point out our nonprofit funding alerts. Tracy and I put out, hopefully on a more regular basis moving forward, nonprofit grant alerts that we receive, that we research on a day-to-day basis, that we forward to our nonprofit partners for review and showing interest in applying for those programs. So just show that real quick since I have this up. Those of you who haven't seen these are what our nonprofit funding alerts look like. This is the one that we've most recently put together for April. So we look at the funding opportunity itself, who is the funder for that opportunity, brief description of what the eligibility is, what the purpose of that program is, the funding amount that would be available for the program, an application deadline. To show you when you need to get all your materials in, if there's a required match, meaning you have to support the grant funds with budgeted funds from your organization as well, and then any additional requirements or links to the program page, just for more information.
Daryl, we do have a hand up. Julie, did you have a question?
No, sorry. I'll take that down.
Not a problem.
From just left over from the poll, I think.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
Just wanted to make sure. Thank you.
Daryl, I just wanted to add real quick that there will be reference slides at the end that we won't show here that shows you how to sign up for the nonprofit alerts and all the other resources that we reference to.
Yep. Thanks, Tracy. While I've got this up, I'll also take a second just to show everyone the Federal Register, which is a great resource to use. It can be a little large and unwieldy if you're a first-time user, but don't get intimidated by it. The Federal Register is a daily publication of rules or proposed rules, notices of federal agencies, executive orders or other presidential documents that gets updated on a daily basis. So if you go to the Federal Register, this will show any sort of federal document that's been released over the last day. So we can take a look and see that for today, there have been an update of 129 documents from 44 different federal agencies. Those include 111 notices, which will probably be where we would find grant information. Three proposed rules, 15 rules, and three other significant documents. So what I can point out here for you is this is where you really want to use your search bar. For the Federal Register, it's best just to you can put in just the word grant. You can put in specific search terms. Let's put in like healthcare grant. So we can see, based on that generalized search, it returned over 5,000 documents. We're probably interested in seeing what's happened in the last 30 or 90 days, so we can sort that by publication date. And it'll show any documents related to the search terms, healthcare, and grant. This is just a general overview. You'll have to dig deeper from here. There's also the opportunity to craft your search terms and cross-reference to see what you can find. But the Federal Register is very timely. It's always up to date, and it comes out every day. So it's an excellent tool to use. And, you know, there are other opportunities as well, not only through federal websites or state websites or grants.gov. You know, feel free to get creative. Use a Google search. Use ChatGPT. There's a lot of different opportunities for you to search for available funding out there. You can go through donor lists. Be creative. Think outside the box, particularly if you're having trouble getting results. Don't be afraid to be creative and look a little bit outside the box. So, I will also take a little bit of time to look at grants.gov. And before I get into that, were there any other questions? All right. So I'll pull that back up. I want to look. I just got an email from our consulting partner with the Ferguson Group informing us of a potential grant opportunity. So that was very timely from Kristen with the Ferguson Group. We work with them very closely to get grant referrals, to have conversations back and forth about what the county needs and what funding is out there. It's always good to have partnerships. And working as a team with them really helps our grant seeking process. So that being said, I'll send Kristen a thank you email later. Grants.gov has recently changed their interface. So it looks a lot more quote unquote modern now. Not sure if I'm a fan of it, but that's typically I'm kind of averse to change on a general basis. So that may be me, but your grants.gov landing page will look like this, and it'll have a bunch of different quick links to search for grants or to look at grant policies or the agencies that might be making grants. They also have updated social media links. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to log in real quick. All right. And so this is what my dashboard looks like. And you can see with your grants.gov account, you have a bunch of different tools across the top. You can learn more about grants, including their own Grants 101 training, eligibility, reporting, any sort of documents related to grants. Training. We'll be able to search for grants. if you're actually applying for grants, this is where you would create a workspace. Workspace is needed to officially apply for a grant, and we'll look at that as well. There's also the ability to track your application and see how it stands in terms of the application submission and then the award notice portions of grants. So we'll take a minute and look at our search through grants.gov, which has also changed a little bit. This is what the general search page will look like on grants.gov. Some very important things that I would point out is our keyword search. This is just like it is on the Federal Register. This is where you could put in specific terms like healthcare or veterans or whatever else your priorities may be. This will pull up all documents related to that. And then we can narrow that down moving forward. So we may be interested in what grants are being forecasted, but we may be looking for funding now. So we can take out the forecasting. So that narrows down our search a little bit for only what's been posted. scrolling down, we also see the different funding instruments. So that could include grants or cooperative agreements or contracts. If we're specifically looking for grants, we can just click on that and it'll only show us results related to grants that have been posted based on our checking this posted box here. We can go even further. So we can look at eligibility. We can narrow things down by, we do a lot for county governments, obviously, but they have narrow categories for for-profit and then nonprofits. So any nonprofits that have a 501c3 status, and again, it said there specifically this is other than institutions with higher education, which I don't think we have here. But this will narrow down our search to grants that have been posted for nonprofits. So now we're down to 917. We're getting there. We're gonna find us something to ask for money. But wait, we can go even further. We can narrow it down by category. So if we didn't put in our keyword search, but we were still looking for items related to health, we could click that health box. So now we've narrowed it down even further. And then we can go even further from there because we can sort it by the agency. So if we're looking for HHS healthcare grants, this is what will come up. So when you've put in all of these search parameters and knocked out what you're not interested in, you're left with what you're going to search through. And hopefully it's not 750 documents, but it may be. Not all of these results will be specific grant programs. These may be very unique to specific health and human services initiatives. But for instance, if we wanted to click on one that we know is a grant, we get to our grant opportunities page. So this is when you actually pull up a grant. You can see what the grant identification number here, which is HRSA-24-079. It tells you what the program is, which department it's from. It'll give you a general synopsis of what the grant is about, including letting you know that it is a discretionary grant program. And what's important here on the right, it shows when the posted date for the grant was. So this is when the opportunity opened. It'll also tell you what the deadline is for applications, which in this case is June 24th. They have an estimated amount of total program funding, $2 million in this case, and each award has a ceiling of $400,000. So they don't have some of the grant opportunities on here will actually show you the number of anticipated awards. So the agency will identify approximately how many awards they intend to give out once applications have been reviewed and scored. So in this case, they don't have a minimum number of awards or a maximum number of awards. Theoretically, there could only be five awards. If five agencies are awarded the maximum of $400,000, then that would take care of their $2 million in funding. But if they don't give the full amount for whatever reason, that could leave room for a lot of different funders or fundings. So that's something you want to keep an eye on. Back up to our search bar, we also have our version history. So this will show when the grant came out and any updates that were made by the agency. There may be changes to the NOFO based on questions that were asked during informational webinars or other sources that may change some of the grant requirements just a little bit. Usually it's not a big change or else they would publicize that a lot. But this is where you'd want to check on that to make sure that you're looking at the most recent, up-to-date, and correct version of the notice of funding. We also have our related documents. This is where you'll pull up the full announcement. This is usually in the form of a zip. So you can click on this and it'll open up a zip folder that will have the full notice of funding. Typically, it'll be in a PDF form, which will show you all the requirements as far as eligibility. Actually, let's go ahead and click on it. So let's see what this brings up. So this is going to bring up a PDF, and it brings up our notice of funding for this program. And again, it'll tell you when the due date is. It'll let you know that you not only need a grants.gov registration, but you also have to input the application through SAM.gov. Oftentimes, there's more than one place that you'll need to submit your application documents. It'll give you contact information, and then it'll talk a little bit about the purpose and objectives, the eligibility. It'll get into the actual application and submission information. This is where it'll show you what's needed for your application. So a project narrative is needed. You'll obviously need a budget for this. You'll need a narrative to go along with your budget to justify your prospective use of funds. It'll also tell you how the application gets reviewed. This is where the art part of it comes in, for me anyway, in the science versus art debate when it comes to grant writing. when you are crafting a grant proposal, not only are you writing to your needs, the community's needs, and your mission and value statement, but you're also writing to the reviewer. If you can't speak to the reviewer, if the reviewer is going to look at 500 different applications and you don't stand out, chances are you're not going to get funded, or the chances are lessened that you're going to get funded. So this is where you really want to take a look at how you craft your grant proposal, how you're putting your sections together, and what the reviewers are looking for. Very important portion of putting a grant together. So any questions on that? All right. And the last.
Do you have a hand? Looks like we do have a hand raised, Becky.
Okay, didn't see.
Yes. You want to unmute your line?
Yep. Could you give a little more information, a little more details about when we write to the reviewer and look through the table of contents? Can you give a little more details of what we would be doing?
Yeah.
That will come up in Barb's presentation when we go over the proposal components. Okay. Also.
And if it doesn't, I'd be happy to answer that once we reach the end. We can come back to it, but I'll remember that, Becky. Thank you. And I just lastly wanted to point out we do have the apply button up here on the right, which is very important. If you've gone through all this information and you decide you do want to apply for the grant, this is where you would go to that. So back to our slideshow. So we're looking at narrowing our focus. Which of the opportunities that we've seen on our grant search, whether it be through grants.gov or the federal agency's website, which one most closely reflects our needs? Does that funder prioritize certain geographic or demographic priorities? How is the grant's mission or the grant's scope match your mission? Are your priorities aligned with the funder? Are there 990s if it's from a foundational grant? There's a lot of different things we can use here to narrow that focus to determine what we're going to apply for. So the last thing I want to talk about is determining our methods. This is where we look at tracking our prospective grants. It's very important to keep track of the grants that you have researched, those of which you have decided to apply for, and the results of that. Past performance predicts future behavior, in other words, and that can be based on the funding source, board priority, connection to your strategic plans. So again, I'll just pull up. This is the prospecting matrix that I use to track the grants that we refer to our departments. So just to give you a quick example, we track the grant name, the funding agency. This came from the Department of Justice. The deadline, this was something from earlier on this fiscal year. So the deadline for this was in September of last year. Potential partners, this is a program that could have fit for multiple departments here. So we referred this program to our Transportation and Capital Infrastructure department. We also referred it to General Services and Parks and Rec. I also keep track of when that was communicated with our departmental partners, and we have links to the actual program itself. So obviously you tailor that to your needs and what you are looking to accomplish as an organization, but this is just what I do. And as you can see, we do multiple referrals. And I think that's the end of my section. So I am going to open it up one more time for questions. And again, I'd be happy to answer any questions at the end of the session, and I'll make sure that my email is available for any questions regarding prospecting. But I see a question from Leslie.
Hey there.
Hi.
I was just curious, given the volume of grants that you review, how often you see grants that are specific to capital campaigns and that type of one-time purchase versus operational coverage, because obviously for an organization, it could be kind of fungible. You know, if it's like capital grants never come up, then maybe we go after more programmatic focused ones and think about our capital campaign from a different perspective. But that's my organization's current focus is trying to purchase our building.
No, that's actually a good question. We've put a lot of emphasis into the federal infrastructure law and the Inflation Reduction Act, which include a lot of capital type projects. We also do a lot with operational as well. So the way we work it within the county is we do our own prospecting. We get help from our consultants with the Ferguson group, but we also get a lot of invaluable feedback from the departments based on their departmental plans, based on their priorities, what they're interested in funding. So we can target that search based on what they're looking for. It would be a tremendous use of resources to just look at every grant that comes out every day. I don't think I could survive in that role. I am already losing my hair, so I'm sure I'd pull that out. So having that focus narrowed from the beginning really helps us out because we can tailor what the departments are looking for. We also tailor a lot based on Board of Supervisors' priorities as well. That's the different sort of whole sort of position we're in as a government, as opposed to where you might be with a nonprofit. So I can see where you're coming from.
Yeah. And just another note on that, Leslie. I really do want to plug the grant alerts. There are county grants that that you can apply for capital funds that are federal flow-through dollars, and those are also included in the funding alerts. So there are opportunities for capital investment in multiple areas. And, you know, you can also look at the state level for like the Department of Education and other funders that are kind of the education focus. I believe you're with Embark. So that could be an area that you focus in on our specific funding agencies at the state level. And then the grant alerts, we include all of that.
That's great. Thank you, Bob.
I did also see the request to share our tracking spreadsheet. When Tracy sends out the materials that she will be for this program, I can make sure that we have a template in there that sort of reflects my tracking matrix. But at this time, I'm going to turn things over to Barb Lawrence, who is the grants coordinator with our team. She's going to talk a little more about proposal components of the grant application. So, Barb, if you want to jump on.
Good morning, everybody. Thank you, Daryl. Appreciate it. I'm Barb Lawrence. I'm the grants coordinator. I kind of have a dual role in my position where I work with Daryl on departmental grant functions, so helping implement or write grants, helping to implement them upon receipt of funding, and then also work externally with our nonprofit partners, our community partners. So welcome this morning. Thank you for being here. Thank you for taking the time. I'm going to focus on, along with Megan Cox, we're going to focus on some standard proposal components that you'll see in requests for proposals or requests for applications. Each proposal is different, or each request for proposals is different. So it's very important that you really read through the components of the RFP, as we call it, and develop your application based on the requests or requirements of that request. In general, there are about eight main proposal components that include an introduction, a background, a purpose, a narrative, and within the narrative, there's a need statement, goals and objectives, and project activities. We also have our budget and our budget narrative, an evaluation plan. Many funders also ask for other funding that your organization receives, so to talk about that. And then there's always attachments at the end, and the attachments can be additional financial information. It could be letters of support. It could be MOUs with community partners. It could be your 501c3 status. So there's lots of other supplementary or additional information that can be included based on what the funder is requesting. So next slide, Tracy. And here's where we really start getting creative. Daryl talked about that between science and creativity. This is where we really start to begin that creative side. You've got your priorities set. You've got your goals, objectives, timelines. You might have an opportunity in mind that you're looking for. So this is where it all starts. So one component of a proposal is an introduction. And it's an easy way to write a strong introduction is to develop a strong problem statement. And we'll talk more about that later. And really use that to develop it. The introduction is a quick way to state what your intentions are up front, and it shows you understand that the funder, it shows that you understand what the funder's looking for, and you kind of draw a straight line from what they're looking for to your mission and vision of your proposed project. Introductions are pretty short. They shouldn't exceed 3 to 4 paragraphs. Next slide. Purpose and background. The organization background becomes the first section of the grant and is intended to describe your organization and why you're applying for the grant. It should establish the credibility of your organization and really demonstrate the capacity and experience that you have to be able to implement that grant upon funding. The purpose includes WIN themes, which are high-level statements that inform the underlying message of your response. They describe why your solution is the number one choice based on your strategic advantage beyond the grant and RFP requirements. So how are you going to take this to the next level? The purpose really explains what you propose to do. Next slide. So again, we've identified our community need. We've got our program, our project. We've developed those keywords. We're looking at funders, what the funder priorities are. Now it's time to really build upon that narrative. And the key and most important part of the narrative is your need statement. It's also called a problem statement or description of need. Your problem statement provides the rationale for the request for funding and uses data. Daryl talked about that use of data earlier and other objective resources that substantiate the need for funding or for finding a solution to a concern. A need statement is a critical part of any grant proposal as it explains why your project or program deserves funding. It's really the core, kind of that heart of your grant proposal, and it should clearly identify the problem or gap that you aim to address or achieve, and also provide evidence of its significance and urgency that demonstrates how your proposed solution will really make a difference and really impact that community need. The purpose is to describe the scope. So you present facts. Here's that data again. Present facts, anecdotes that support the needs for your program. The problem statement questions should be answers based on the problem or issue your services are seeking to solve. And the purpose or the need statement is to present both facts and stories to support the needs for your program. And as I mentioned, it's really the heart of your story of your program. The program or need statement will ultimately be about an area of concern, a condition to be improved upon, or a difficulty to be eliminated that requires understanding and deliberate intervention. Making the need and your credibility to solve the problem clear to the funder will make the difference between a funded project and a rejected project.
Barb, I think we have a question.
Okay, thank you.
Becky, did you have a question?
I had a quick one. Just the definition of stories. What do you mean by stories?
So they can be a testimonial. It could be how your it could be from a client, from a patient, from a person that has utilized your services. It could be a testimonial. It could be and it's also about telling your story of your organization. Megan, did you want to jump in?
Yeah. I just wanted to make sure that, you know, when we're defining stories, that really the story or the anecdote that Barb is describing is specific to the project that you are proposing, but then also aligns with the data you have. So, for instance, if you are working with, you know, something to do with healthy families, you're looking at families who may live in food deserts, for instance, or specific zip codes that have food deserts. And within that population, you're looking at low income, maybe 100% federal poverty level, and the need there you can create based on data and then have a family testimonial, let's say, from a client to say, without this service, my family would have no way to access food. So really, it's the combination to help tell the story and then reinforce with a testimonial. And it looks like there's also another hand up. I believe it was Susie.
Yes. When you refer to the need for data, even if we write down the actual article where the data came from, do you prefer to see links, hyperlinks that actually enables the reviewer to go directly to the source?
That's a great question. And often in federal and state grants, hyperlinks, they don't typically get used. So it's also good to have a works cited page.
Yeah, I'd also point out that a lot of proposal components do have a word count limit. So you may need to adjust based on the limit in the word count.
Yeah. Okay. So in other words, placing it in a footnote or an end note as well.
Okay. Thank you.
And also keep in mind that several online application portals, sometimes those links don't transfer and they can get broken in the system. So be aware of that as well. So don't always rely on those hyperlinks to get more of your message across as they can break. Tracy, did you want to say something more?
Yeah, just highlighting from Becky's question earlier, where Daryl was illustrating the components of the NOFO or the Notice of Funding Opportunity. Your data and testimonials and stories should align to the funder's priorities really easily. So you're not changing your mission or project to chase the dollars. Like, it should be as you're scanning the NOFO that you see alignment without too much change. So that's where I just wanted to bring up your earlier question.
That's a great point, Tracy. Thank you for that. Any other questions? Okay, just back to the need statement. If your grant application lacks that compelling, urgent need, your grant will equally be unimpressive. Again, it's urgent. It's an urgent need that will get the idea funded. The statement of need drives your grant proposal and outlines why the project must be undertaken. Remember, reviewers, they're smart, and they're people who have read hundreds of applications, as Daryl mentioned before. one after another. They could be reading several of them. So it's your job to make the reviewer's job easier by connecting all the dots and making it clear and easy to see that you have the magic solution to solving the detailed urgent need. The next part of our narrative is our goals and objectives. Your goals describe how the situation is expected to change as a result of the grant program, and your objectives identify anticipated outcomes and benefits in measurable terms. We like to use SMART goals, which are goals that are specific and have significantly greater chance of being accomplished. SMART goals are specific. You're going to ask yourself what's being accomplished, what actions will you take. They're well-defined, they're clear. Measurable is what data will be measured. Again, data. How much, how well, specific criteria that measure your progress toward the accomplishment of the goal. Your goal must be achievable. Is it doable? Do you have the necessary skills and the resources? Do you have the staff to be able to implement it once you're funded? Your goal is relevant or realistic? How does the goal align with broader goals? Why is the result important? Again, this goes back to also the funder goals. Time bound. What is the time frame for accomplishing the goal? With a clearly defined timeline, you include a starting date and a target end date. Again, the purpose is to create some urgency. To make goal specific, ask the following: who's involved? What do I want to accomplish? Where is the goal to be achieved? When do I want to achieve the goal? And why do I want to achieve it? With that, I'm going to turn it to Megan, who's going to talk a little bit more about goals, objectives, and how they tie into evaluation.
Thanks, Barb. I'll give a pause there to see if there are any questions on the narrative sections before we move into the logic model portion. All of these segments that we're discussing as separate segments should fit together in what Barb was describing as the story. So it was very purposeful early in the presentation that we had the funnel in the PowerPoint slides, where you are looking at your community need, your own programs and services, then keywords, and then the funder priority. So what we are doing is helping to narrow down what your projects or your programs have in relation to the funder's priority. So one piece of that, thanks Tracy for bringing that back there, we can go back to the logic model now. One piece of that is making sure that you are not requesting grant funds for your entire organization. Okay, many of you have missions and visions and populations that you would like to help across multiple programs or multiple projects. So for instance, my background is in education research. It may be a reading intervention for K-3 students that you're focusing on, or making sure that families have healthy food when the children go home on the weekends. Or it could be supporting family employment, where both parents or adults in the household are out of work. And what you're looking for is multiple programs, right? Those surrounding services that you provide, you may need to only pick one to be able to make a viable proposal. Because if you start really, really broad, the message is going to get lost. And where a logic model helps you is to really organize the information around your singular project or your singular purpose. And it should connect from your needs statement and the data that you've collected as part of that needs statement. This is a visual depiction of how your program is supposed to work. So, for instance, if you have the reading intervention, let's say, you want to make sure that you detail your target population early on in the proposal, in the needs statement, and in the purpose. And you carry that population throughout into the logic model. So you should have a background of what the need is. You should have the purpose of your, let's say, reading intervention or, you know, resolution to food deserts, and be able to carry those data through to say, okay, now we are at the very middle of that funnel, the smallest portion. And that's what the logic model is. So the logic model conveys all of the information in a series of if-then statements in a visual depiction. So that's really all your logic model is a series of if-then statements that focus on what's needed to actually accomplish your outcomes, what are your activities in very clear and short, concise statements, what your short-term and long-term outcomes are, and how the project is going to work. So if a reviewer has, you know, only an hour to review your proposal, they should be able to go to the logic model and see it all laid out in one visual depiction. That's the purpose of the logic model, in order to help you build your goals and objectives. A logic model is not detailed. The detail comes later in your SMART goals and your SMART objectives and your activities. It's also not just a sequential listing. So it's not, you know, January we will do this, February we will do this, March we will do this. What we're looking for are those if-then statements. For instance, if we employ dialectic reading with K-3 students who are 1.5 standard deviations below their peers in reading group, we should see, right? So it's if-then or if-and-then, and they need to be really clearly delineated. Next slide, please. So we do have a series of definitions that this will be in the PowerPoint slide. As I mentioned, inputs are those resources that are needed to operate your program. So this would include grant funds. This also would include, you know, your staff and their expertise. So if there is a certification that your staff would need, or materials that your staff would need to actually implement an intervention or program, that is what the input is. Specifically looking at the inputs, also it is how can you make this happen, right? What are the necessary components to making the activities happen? And the activities are those activities that you would carry out in sequential order. So for instance, you may need to recruit or do some marketing for your program. That would be an activity someone is actually doing. You also may need materials for families, right? So material development would be an activity. It is the verb in the entire logic model. That's where the verb and the action step kind of come in. Everything else is going to be descriptive. And either a noun or an adjective. So really your activities are the action steps that you would take in relation to the tasks that are provided. You know, this may be curriculum materials. It may be in terms of like a capital campaign, the actual building, the purchase of the building, and what that means for the program and the actual dissemination of materials or distribution of expertise. Outputs, so again, using those if-then statements, if we have the inputs necessary, we can then complete activities. If the activities are completed, we then can provide the following outputs. The outputs really are the number of services or the number of results that are directly related to your activities. So for instance, if you are working on training or employment, it's the number of people trained. It's the number of family members who went through an employment course. So it's very simply, what is the result of your activity? And that should be, again, something very simple and not detailed in terms of a visual depiction. It may just be a few words that you would then elaborate on in your evaluation plan. Your short-term outcomes, again, it's how your clients will benefit, and specifically not just how they will benefit in the short term, but they also should be able to link your impact statement or your outcomes to a larger goal. So that's where we were talking about the funnel starts. This is the narrowest part of that funnel. Then once you start explaining your outcomes and your impacts, you're starting to see the bottom part of the funnel, almost like an hourglass, come back out. So that's where you bring the impact statements. You know, this intervention can help all K through third populations. So we'll go to the next slide. All right, so this is just a visual depiction of what our American Rescue Plan Act Tranche 2 activities were when we did this exercise as a result of what we wanted to accomplish with nonprofits. So one thing that is just a tip or a trick for really working through the logic model is to start with your long-term outcomes. So step one is to actually write out what your long-term outcomes are for the program you're applying. These long-term outcomes should match what the intended outcomes of your program or your proposal that you're applying for, that funding agency, what that is. So maybe it's K through three kids are catching up, or maybe it's developing market sharing or shared space for fresh fruit and vegetables and food deserts, or transportation planning for those. So really, you want to lead with what your intended outcomes are in the long term. Then you want to backtrack. What is one step before you can get to those outcomes? Those are the midterm outcomes, okay? And really what you're looking for here is attitude changes, behavior changes. You know, an intermediate outcome could be something that's exhibited from the result of your program being used over and over again over a period of time. So, for instance, this could be something like youth have, if we're looking at, you know, youth absence rates, right? I mean, we see a lot of high incidences of absences. You know, it could be that they have fewer than 10 unexcused absences. That would be a specific midterm outcome. Step three, you actually will skip over your short-term and outputs and start with the activities. Okay, what activities can get you to your outcomes? And so that is going to be, again, that step-by-step sequential activity that you're looking for. Then you identify your outputs and your inputs. These are all going to be tailored to the grant application or the notice of funding opportunity that you have. So one suggestion that I have is if and when you build your logic model, make sure that some parts are interchangeable, because that way that can give you the best line of sight from beginning to end. Really what you're looking for here is the how. How is this going to get done? And visually depicting that will help a reviewer understand better the entire process from start to finish. Next slide, please. Here's just another example. We do have the links at the bottom for these examples. So there you can do a logic model in any way that you need to. They can be as complicated or as simple as necessary. This one is obviously one that's more complicated. All right, next slide. Again, another logic model that has multiple activities for a training program, right? So it could be that you have day one should lead into day two, should lead into outputs and short and long-term outcomes. So these are all just examples of a way that you can put together a logic model. All right. So the last piece is, once you have the logic model created, is actually to start building out an evaluation plan. And the evaluation plan should include measurement or methods to actually collect data on the effectiveness and the efficiency of your program. How well did it work and for whom? Right? So this is really getting into the narrow aspects, and we can talk a little bit more about the evaluation plan in future sessions, which we will have. But essentially what you're looking for is a series of metrics and measurements using your logic model to be able to then evaluate how well your program did, or who your capital campaign impacted most, or how the community was impacted for a positive way. All right, next slide. And with this, I'm going to turn this back over to Barb, but we'll take just a minute or two to see if there are questions on the logic model. I know I went through that very quickly, but I wanted to make sure we had time to finish this up. Are there any questions on the logic model or evaluation? Nope. All right.
Thank you, Megan. So the next piece, or next component of a narrative or of the proposal, are called project activities. And these definitely tie back to the activities that you're putting into your logic model. So it's important to only list activities that are relevant to your specific objectives. Activities are how the project produces results. It is vital that activities are well thought out and documented. Activities are by means which a project makes results. So it's vital that activities are well thought out, documented, so you can prove that activities will meet your objectives. It's ideal to provide information such as lessons learned from the previous project, activities as identified by beneficiaries or other community members, and other background research. Detailed activities are also easier to plan and to budget for. Next slide. Now we jump into the project budget and narrative. It's very important to know your budget ahead of time and to link it back to programming and operational costs, if operational costs are indeed an eligible budgeted expense. Typically, your budget consists of a line item budget where it's detailed, where it's the cost per activity with a final budgeted cost. And it also is comes along with it as budget narrative. And your narrative is what it is, the narrative. It's an explanation of those expenses, how it ties back to your project, and specifically lays out those costs. There are several components of a budget. It can include personnel, who is that staff that is going to be part of the project, implementing the project and carrying it through. Also includes fringe benefits. In addition to salary, what are those fringe benefits? It can include travel. Is it going to take staff to travel from one site to another to accomplish the project goals? Equipment and supplies, consultant fees, other costs, and other costs can also include indirect costs. Next slide, Tracy. Again, some common government grant budget characteristics. The funding agency could ask for a multi-year budget project. And this is where they're just asking you for you, if it's a multi-year program, what are your costs in year one, in year two, and in year three? So you really have to think of, our salary is going to increase from year one to year two. How is that going to look? Are there going to be an increase in supplies? So being very thoughtful from 1 year to the next. It could, federal grants often ask for matching funds. This could be include a cost share or a local match. And it could be matching funds could be a cash match. Or cash donations, or it could be other, a non-federal grant could also be a cash match, or an in-kind match where it could be volunteer hours, it could be donated office space, it could be donated travel expenses, could be an in-kind match. Restricted funding, also part of federal grants. These are funds that can only be used for specific purposes outlined in the grant application. Government funding is most often project-based, so you will have to do some internal accounting to process some expenses within your project. There's also direct service costs, which these are direct payments to a client, to a patient, to a resident on behalf, and any staff who provide intake or case management and closeout, any staff that provides direct support to that, but aren't directly related to the project. There's also what we call indirect, also known as faculty and administrative costs. And they're, these costs can be across multiple parts of your organization. So if you have multiple grants, indirect costs can be split between each of those funding pools to be able to support that project. Within direct and indirect costs, we also have what's called a negotiated indirect cost rate agreement, and it's a document that estimates the indirect cost rate for your particular organization. And typically, to apply for, to get a negotiated indirect cost rate, you go through a federal agency to get that. If you don't have negotiated indirect cost rate agreement, typically in federal grants, we use what's called the de minimis rate, and currently that's at 10%. So you can use 10% of your direct costs to go to that indirect line item. The next slide, here's just a sample project budget with a narrative. It includes sections of personnel employees. So name your employees, name their position, tell us what their annual salary is, tell us the percent FTE. So what percent of their time is going to be used to implement your project. With this particular budget, it also includes a narrative. Sometimes they can be separate or included with the budget. Again, it's about knowing the funder, what they're asking for. There's lots of different budget templates that are out there. So utilize the one that your funder is requesting you to use. Lastly, but firstly, is the abstract. The abstract usually comes before the introduction if both are required. Typically, one is required, the other one is not. More in research type of grants, they ask for both of them. So this is part where it's really just a real succinct summary of your entire project. It generally has a word limit. And this abstract is usually the part of the application that becomes public. So for example, in our human service nonprofit application process, we ask for a short, succinct explanation or description of your project. And that usually is what's made public. It goes to the Board of Supervisors item. So you really want to make it succinct and kind of to the point. We put this last because typically the abstract is the last thing that you'll write of your proposal. It brings it all together. You pull all those concepts, those components together to do your abstract. Any questions before we move to our next section? Having seen none, I will turn it back to Tracy.
Okay, and in closing, I did put a session evaluation link in the chat. We're data-driven too. We also want to see how you enjoyed the session today and suggestions for future sessions. That being said, we do have a spring grant cohort. So that's taking all of the concepts that you saw at today's training and our previous ARPA nonprofit professional development trainings and putting it to practice. So I believe I can put that in the chat as I'm talking and doing two things at once. And again, the there are four sessions. Daryl will go deeper into the details with prospecting. Then we'll go over narrative and evaluation plans. So again, this was a general overview. We'll go more into the details. We'll have a half day on developing a project budget. And then at the end, by the end of this, you'll have a complete set of standard proposal components for your organization, and you'll have selected a mock government proposal to actually respond to and tailor these applications to. And then we hope that by the a year from when you've done this session that you've applied for a government grant. So you can apply through for that through the 11th. On our website that is in the chat, and I hope you do apply. And then again, with any questions, either about the cohort, this session in general, you can reach out to us at nonprofits@loudon.gov. In our resources that I share, I'll also put our emails in the chat. Daryl did say he would share some things, and we're all open for questions and very approachable and really want to help you. So we went 1 minute over, but if we'll remain on the line for any questions, and please fill out your session evaluations too. Oh, Becky, I see you in the chat. I'll make sure there's a resource slide that I will distribute that has all of the correct links. And I will email if you've attended, if you registered for the session, I have your email. So I'll email the slides, the recording, and some PDFs for you.
And it does look like we have a question. So we will answer as many questions as you want. And so, you know, this is technically the end of the session if you were slated until 11:30. Congratulations, you made it. And yeah, we will take questions. So Susie, I see your hand up. And then if there are other questions, we're happy to answer those as well.
So, yes, my question is regarding the next session of training that you just referred to, because I read about it and it said that you're only going to take 5 nonprofits for the course. So what are your criteria for selecting the 5?
That's a great question. And I think our biggest criterion is commitment. We want to make sure that you have staff within your organization that are committed to attending and also committed to homework and writing the components of the grant. So we know we want to make sure that we can support small and larger organizations. So if you're a larger organization, you may have multiple staff attending, you know, depending on if they're the development officer, if there's a grant writer that you use, we would want your staff to attend. If you're a smaller organization, we would still want either an executive director or someone who's responsible for the development role to attend all sessions so that they really do get the full experience of the content and then the homework, because then we will continue with the curriculum starting with the homework in the second session. This really is a connected cohort model. So commitment is really the number one criterion.
Great, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions that we can answer? All right. Well, thank you all so much for attending. And as Tracy mentioned, we will get the materials and links out to you as soon as everything's ready. Have a great afternoon, everyone.
Thank you.